Welcome to the Space Show, Kate.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me on.
Now, who regulates Australian space activities now?
Well, at the moment, there's a range of government authorities that do it. We have the Space Launch Licensing Intergovernmental Agreements do it with the space tracking through the ESA.
Okay, space tracking being the thing like Tidbinbilla.
Yeah, that's right.
Is this going to change under the new policy?
No, it's not going to change, but we're going to have obviously a much greater coordination. I think the spirit behind our policy is very much having, by having an overall approach, it allows all of the different elements that are involved in space policy to work far more effectively together.
Now, why should we have a satellite utilisation policy? Or perhaps we should even have a wider space policy?
Well, this really, I think, goes to a heart of a lot of the discussion about this policy. One of the, I think, reflections on it was, why is it called a satellite utilisation policy rather than a space policy? And that was really, I think, the focus of it was very much on the practical things that we can do with our current space capabilities and where we can, I think, reasonably and sensibly have an eye to the future. I don't think that constrains the vision for a broader space policy, though, and I suspect that over time that's where it will evolve. And I know there's been quite a bit of comment around the semantics of the title of the policy being a satellite utilisation policy, which certainly of the view it more tightly reflected what was being expressed in the policy, although I think everyone, including me, from time to time calls it our space policy.
Now, what are the main features of this new policy?
The main features are the articulation of seven principles and the fact that it will be coordinated through a central office, if you like, within the Department of Innovation. That space coordination office is still being set up, but it will play the role identified throughout the policy as far as coordinating, linking, being a contact point both domestically and internationally on space policy-related matters. And the policy, the principles themselves go through a range of, I suppose, goals or aspirations that Australia would like to achieve and has a series, under each principle, a series of tasks or activities the government is committed to undertaking to meet those principles, if you like.
As I read through the policy, it struck me that a lot of the things in it were things that were or should have been done by the old Australian Space Office.
I think one of the reflections on this policy is to be able to pull it together into a cohesive document after substantial consultation. Some of it strikes people, I think, reasonably as, well, weren't we doing that anyway? Or I would have assumed that was part of our function and role in the past. And I think in some respects that's true, but I think there's enormous benefit in bringing it together in one document and articulating it in the way that we have. I think it clarifies both the roles and relationships, and it puts around the those various functions and activities a much broader aspiration about, yes, space policy is valuable to Australia more so than ever, and assigns, a very important, I guess the way I put it, it does assign a very specific value in economic and social terms to what our activities are, and I think that's an important step in the evolution of this policy.
Now, how does this new policy fit within the government's overall innovation policy?
Well, it's an important aspect because first and foremost it acknowledges that there's a whole lot of function and activity that occurs currently in Australia that's heavily reliant on this kind of information, on geo, locational information, on GPS, on satellite, the satellite capabilities and how they contribute to all of those things. I haven't seen that acknowledged in that way before. I've spoken about it a lot in the past, particularly in relation to geospatial information. But I think saying very clearly that a whole range of work that we do and the areas that we like to pride ourselves on do rely heavily on our satellite capabilities, and it's the expression of that that I think is a bit of a wake-up call for all of our industries. Perhaps they know the reliance on it because of what they do, but when it's drawn together in the way that we have and expressed in that way, you start to understand how deep that reliance and fundamental economic impact is on industry.
Now, when you talk space, people think big dollars, lots of money. Is space involvement very expensive, or can it be affordable?
Well, I think we're living proof as a nation that it is affordable. We are involved. We are involved in, I think, a way that is built on necessity and follows, the form follows function in many respects. So I don't think it's necessarily expensive. And I think one of the challenges of the past is that expressing a space policy involved investing in a massive new capability. And we've been very clear about this in the document. This isn't about putting people in space, much to some people's disappointment. It isn't about exploration of other planets, again, much to some people's disappointment, but it is about the very practical ways in which we do utilise space capabilities, primarily through satellites, hence the satellite utilisation policy title. And we do it in an incredibly efficient way. We do it through partnering internationally. We do it through relationships that are well established across both civilian and defence organisations. And we do it in a way that really leverages what private industry has to offer. So it's a complex picture already. And I think that was part of the challenge in pulling this policy together and in understanding what that complex picture looked like. And within that complex picture, where are the areas we need to take care? For example, a lot of the international capability that we rely on now is potentially at risk over the next 5 years. What are we doing to safeguard that and access to that capability? And that's certainly one of the elements that has been identified in the policy.
Now, one of the people we spoke to that's on the Space Council said that we should subscribe to a upstream-downstream concept. You know, in other words, we should avoid the big things, which you seem to be doing, and concentrate on ground systems and utilisation of the data. Do you subscribe to that?
Look, I do, and one of the elements of this policy is to, or the ongoing bodies of work, is to develop that downstream aspect of it, to develop a plan. We've got two plans that we're going to be developing under the policy. One is the National Earth Observations from Infrastructure Plan, and the other one is the National Positioning Infrastructure Plan, which is about that domestic ground infrastructure. This is important because I think, well, my experience in the way we use, for example, geospatial information is pervasive. As a government, we geolocate everything we put in our respective databases across a range of portfolios. And how we strengthen that will determine how effectively we can not only apply the data but have the skills to be able to extract the knowledge and information from those systems. And that's really where our sixth principle comes into play, and that is about the skills and smarts that we have within our society to be able to use and manage the data in order to extract the knowledge and share it. And if you're able to manage and use big data effectively as a nation, as we ought to be able to do, then we're in a much better position to actually derive benefit from having an excellent satellite utilisation policy. And this fits in very neatly with our commitment as a government into the national broadband network. We're going to be one of the few Western developed countries with a universal high bandwidth network that will change Australia's strengths and skills and capabilities in this area as well. And this is a very, very complementary and I would say completely integrated part of technology and innovation in this policy we're discussing now.
Now, we are great users of the data from space, but we don't actually generate it ourselves. Is there any way that we can, if not actually, you know, we're not putting up our own satellites and things by and large, but can we direct or ask other nations to do it and be partners with them in that, and actually generating the data rather than just using it?
I'm not quite sure how that will look, but one of the points we make in this policy is that we need a capability in order to be a part of that international cooperation and conversation. So the more value we can add in aspects of how we use the data, the more engaged we are and can be in the conversation about what data is actually produced and collected. So it's very much an international partnership and cooperation approach. We've got capabilities here that people need. That puts us in a good position, and I'm really pleased in this policy that we assert that right and assert that capability and understanding of what we can contribute. And the policy speaks directly to a much stronger and more effective engagement in those international circles and actually having a say in what, you know, the rules are, if you like, of what's going on in space with satellite utilisation. So that's, I think, very empowering for Australia and for businesses involved in this area, and signals a level of engagement by Australia that hasn't been seen before.
Now, will implementing this new policy require any new funding commitments or perhaps redirected funding?
Look, it may well do. Certainly the department at the moment is just going through the detail of establishing the resources for the Office of Space Policy Coordination. I think that's a very welcome development. We need that central place. We've got some fabulous people in there doing great work at the moment. And I think that how our various actions articulated under each principle pursued will no doubt involve the reassigning perhaps of resources in the short term, but point to future investments as well.
Now, Peter Owood has been speaking with members of industry, and he's got some questions to ask related to their reaction to your policy. Peter.
Some years ago, when the Space Policy Unit was established in 2009, there was an associated allocation of funding of about $40 million for that, and part of that funding, or large proportion of it, was allocated to different projects in different stages via the Australian Space Research Program. I know we're coming up to budget time, and I think the current funding runs out at the end of this financial year. Andrew touched on it. What is the position in that program?
Well, that program isn't a continuing program, but what we've been able to do through this policy is point to the areas of future work that will continue. But we've benefited enormously, I think, from those research investments, and, of course, other space-related research projects will be able to compete for other funding pools across the portfolio.
The policy, as you've mentioned, rules out launching rockets and putting people on Mars, etc. But some of the people I've spoken to in the industry feel that it falls short and fails to recognise that Australian companies can play a key role in basically these types of projects. How do you respond to that?
I don't think this policy excludes that in any way. What the policy makes clear is that this is not an area that is going to motivate investment by government. But for Australian companies to be playing a role in that area is fantastic, and of course could lead to building a broader capability within Australia that ultimately will be recognised in our national policy. But I think one of the important things about this policy was that it reflected very accurately the government's priorities and focus, and didn't mislead, I think, in an unreasonable way about the nature and extent of what we were able to do.
Right. So you launched the policy up at the Australian Advanced Instrumentation Technology Centre, and that's a world-class facility. Does the policy or the settings or the innovation component of what you've announced or foreseeing feed into building Australian domestic space capability?
Look, I think it does. One of the things I'm very, it's important to acknowledge we're in a very tight fiscal circumstance at the moment, so we're operating in an environment where substantial new investment is highly unlikely from the public purse. But that said, there are several things that are already occurring that have got excellent momentum, and the facility at Mount Stromlo is a great example of that. There's obviously a lot going on in other areas. They flow on from the research projects and the impact that they've had. But we're not trying to, paint a picture that isn't real either. This is very practical, and one of one aspect of the feedback I've been pleased about is that it's very practical policy, acknowledging what we are able to do, but offers not only the acknowledgement of the significance of the area, of the sector, but points to a very strong future where we continue to build on that awareness about the importance of satellite utilisation and space policy and how it affects, well, as I said before, so many aspects of our current industry, and can offer such a strong platform for future innovation as well.
Without breaching any confidentiality, do you think that space will be made reference to in the budget announcement?
I actually would be breaching all our rules if I even answered that question. We're not allowed to reflect on the budget at all, as everyone understands.
But some in industry comment that the policy is a good policy. It's fairly conservative and minimalistic in what it's trying to achieve and what it's trying to do. It also points to things that we're quite good at and fostering that. But some in the industry say that really we're telegraphing our punches to the competitors out there in the world, and that some of the things that we are aiming to do can be done by other countries, perhaps at a cheaper rate.
Well, the only comeback to that is, well, does that mean we don't project our capabilities out there and keep them secret? Look, we do live in a very competitive world, but it's also a very open world in assessing capabilities and competitive strengths and weaknesses. By articulating and projecting our strengths in the way that we have, we're signalling to other countries that not only are we competitive and have a capability, but our door is open to international cooperation. We are never going to have an end-to-end capability here that could somehow, compete in the global environment in anything other than in a cooperative and develop our niche strengths. We've got a great reputation as a country for being open about that, for being a good collaboration partner in international projects, and it's an area that I'd certainly like to see develop. So I think those comments are motivated by that parochial pride in what we're potentially capable of in the competitive front, but I think tempered reasonably by the idea that we have our niche strengths, and the best way to have a say and establish our presence in the international world is to share that and work with that and build those relationships.
Perhaps people may not be aware, but government and industry in Australia do spend a lot of money per year on space. Yeah. Mostly as a customer, unfortunately. Now, recently the NBN Co announced, I think, a $2 billion investment in satellites for the National Broadband. Did the Space Policy Unit or your department have a hand in any of those decisions? Is there a way of perhaps enforcing or making incentives for Australian industry to be directly involved in those?
I'm not close enough to NBN's procurement processes, but I presume in the way that the NBN has been structured that they would have made those decisions in the best business interests of the NBN Co. They are accountable through the Parliament for their expenditures being publicly owned. But I'd be more than happy to follow that up and ask specifically the question of NBN as to what those requirements are. My understanding is that we haven't specifically articulated any requirements, but I'd like to double-check that.
I'm sort of reminded of procurements by defence in past years, and also domestic carriers like Boeing and Lockheed Martin, where actually facilities have been established in Victoria here, and they're still running today quite successfully.
They are, and a lot of those would have emerged out of, in fact, the former Labor government's partnerships for the development program under John Button, where a co-investment by a multinational body in either a research facility or working with domestic partners was part of the contract. Those sorts of opportunities are less available to us in policy terms now through a range of free trade agreements and other changes. It obviously worked because a lot of those facilities are still there. I think the point I'd like to make is that there's fabulous business sense in bringing in local suppliers, small businesses, to enhance a large capability in Australia, and often many efficiencies to be gained. In fact, potentially far more than would be found with global partners.
Just one more question on the innovation part of it. Innovation is made reference to throughout the document. Can you specifically sort of point to how the innovation in the policy really encourages innovation in Australia and what that might look like?
I think it will encourage innovation in that it gives form and shape and value to the space industries and satellite utilisation industries. I think that will give some succour to companies looking to invest in the area, that there is a focus, that there is a prospect of associating themselves with a larger movement and a very positive economic trajectory for this industry sector in Australia. Fostering innovation itself, many of our programs are far more tangible and geared towards individual companies themselves in doing it. So between the two approaches, the big picture and the value and role of the industry, and then with our programs that are very, I think, granular and geared towards businesses arming themselves with the capability to become more innovative, to lift their eyes to global markets and so forth, and they can find support there.
So the Space Coordination Office is moving towards the core central communication point within government for space activities. Does their reach include the military side, and also do they coordinate international agreements, Austrade, any of those sorts of things?
Look, I presume as far as domestic or civilian and military, there'll be appropriate points of contact and interconnection. Yes, as far as that international coordination goes, I would envisage that as being absolutely their role.
Now, Kate, is there anything in your policy that will drive the aspirations of high school and university students?
Again, I really think there is. In articulating the policy itself, it gives that shape and substance to the fact that we value this industry sector. We have a capability, and it's a capability we'd like to further expand. I know from personal experience, and I'm sure you won't mind, I took my son and daughter up to Mount Stromlo for a look around, and for the first time they started getting excited about how you would apply the maths and science that they're learning to something like working in astronomy. And I think for so many children, it's making that connection between the subjects that they study and what they could be doing as an adult, either as a researcher or a technician or you know, ultimately a leader in their respective field of science. There probably isn't an area that is the source of more inspiration than looking at space and what's around us as an Earth and how that's applied. So I think the space industry and space, the study of space and research around space and satellite technologies is in many respects far more than the sum of its parts. It could potentially be the source of inspiration for so many of our students contemplating, math, science and physics in their day-to-day work, but not really understanding how it could be applied in the real world. Well, we've got some fabulous examples within this industry that I think can really help inspire kids to take up that field of study, regardless of where they end up.
Well, let's pretend now that we're in the year 2023 and we're looking back at the decade that's just gone, back to 2013. What effect would you hope your policies had in shaping today's world in 2023?
Well, I would hope that it would have continued to evolve quite rapidly as the reliance, well, the understanding of the reliance and role of satellite-based technologies and satellite utilisation form. I know with something as simple as you know, GPS, that will be far more pervasive than it is now. I know with Earth observation that so many, well, as a general rule, good data means you can make good policy decisions, but a far greater improvement of access to data and our ability to analyse and draw conclusions and draw knowledge from that data will just be a part of our life. We'll be managing big data, and a lot of that big data will be what we get from the satellites and those information systems. So I think that the world we will live in, this will all be in some respects taken for granted. It's what we do on top of it. So between now and 2023, it's a massive expansion of that capability. I think Australia, if you look at other sectors, our involvement in the international conversation about what the rules of the road are is highly strategic and essential, and in the future will allow us to punch above our weight in this area as we have in other areas of global import in the past.
Senator Kate Lundy, thanks for joining us on The Space Show.
It's a pleasure to talk to you.